Turn to Luke chapter 2. And we're going to pick up kind of where we've been left off the last week. But we, I don't necessarily title sermons too often. Just series, and then I just preach whatever happens to come out during that. But if I did have to title one, that would either be Finding Jesus or The Boy Jesus. Because I'm about to preach a sermon. I think I've preached on this topic once before, but I'm going to preach it a different way today. But this is something that goes untalked about very much within the church. We all know the story of Jesus being a youth. The one time it's accounted for, so it's when you look to try to teach, but it somehow ends up being the last thing that's taught to kids, and we move on from there, and we talk about the adult Jesus, and we kind of forget about the young Jesus, so to speak, when we get into sermons on Sundays and talking about some of these things. But as we look at the life of Christ leading us up to the cross, this is a good place to start. Now, just to clarify a little bit, I did go into the Beatitudes a few weeks ago when we were doing another series, and I'm not going to necessarily spend a lot of time on the Sermon on the Mount other than to maybe mention just a couple of small things. In essence, what this From the Manger to the Cross series is doing, it's in essence just a journey from Bethlehem to Calvary, and we're going to highlight some things, but we're going to look at the lessons we can learn. And so with that in mind, I want us to look at today's text. But with today being the first Sunday of the year, and today being January the 6th, it's the first actual Sunday of 2019, what that means for us today is simply this. It means that we are sort of in a season of new beginnings. We've already talked about that a little bit last week, but we're in a new beginning type phase of where we are as a church. And, you know, Christmas is done. We've celebrated the coming of Christ. But we celebrated Advent with that. And with Advent, it almost marks the Christian New Year. I mean, every year, it's almost like, and you can attest to this, it's almost like every year coming into Christmas, I mean, any of us that have spent any time in church, we know Christmas is going to be the same sermon or something generally the same every year, right? We know that we're going to hear that story. We're going to celebrate again, and it's the beginning of Christ. So it's almost like the calendar turns over to a new year. We talk about the new beginning that Christ had get, or that God had offered the earth by sending Christ. And then Easter, always talk about the same thing, the death of Christ. But as I looked at this and studied this over the last few weeks, the one thing that continues to come to mind is, why can't we do this all the time? Why can't we celebrate Christ 52 weeks out of the year instead of two? What is the block that we have that we don't want to necessarily spend all our time celebrating the birth and the resurrection of Christ? Because in essence, the birth is similar to the resurrection. Because without the birth from the grave, Christ didn't have, there was no opportunity for us to have anything fulfilled within the rest of his life. Had he not risen from the grave, then none of it, none of anything else in the 33 years prior to that would have mattered. I mean, really think about that for a moment. But had he not been born, then that second birth from the grave wouldn't have happened either. Because he would have never been able to overcome death if he had never come to the earth to begin with. So those two things have to work together. But then there's a whole other section of things that need to take place. We talked last week about the wise men and the fact that they were educated men who just simply wanted to find the king that was prophesied. We also talked about Simeon. And we talked about the fact that he had been promised he would see salvation come. And this week I want to go to Luke chapter 2, starting in verse 39. It's when the family returns to Nazareth. And then we continue through this section of Scripture. When they had performed all things according to the law of the Lord, they returned to Galilee, to their own city, Nazareth. And the child grew and became strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. Mark that verse with your finger, however you want to, because I'm going to go back to that verse here in just a bit. But his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem according to the custom of the feast. When they finished the days, as they returned, the boy Jesus lingered behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother did not know it. But supposing him to have been in the company, they went a day's journey and sought him among their relatives and acquaintances. So when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem seeking him. Now so it was that after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, both listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. So when they saw him, they were amazed. And his mother said to him, "Son, why have you done this to us? Look, your father and I have sought you anxiously." And he said to them, "Why did you seek me? Did you not know that I must be about my father's business?" But they did not understand the statement which he spoke to them. Then he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was the subject to them. But his mother kept all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. Now, I've spent some time talking about that verse, Luke 2:52, I believe even in here, talking about what that meant. But that verse, Luke 2:40, and even if you go back to a couple earlier verses within Luke, you find something interesting about how this plays out. Number one is, you see that Jesus grew. And you see this more than once. You see this mentioned more than once. I mean, Luke chapter 1 verse 80 says, "So the child grew and became strong in spirit and was in the deserts till the day of his manifestation to Israel." Talking about John the Baptist. Talking about that, or well, no, talking about Christ. But, you know, talking about all of these things, you have John the Baptist, you have Christ, both who grew spiritually as children. Now, something really sticks out to me in this, to find this in this statement here, to understand something here. What we need to understand is simply this. It simply gives us the opportunity to understand. I mean, Zechariah has this vision, and you, child, will be called the prophet of the highest, for you will go before the face of the Lord to prepare his ways. And then it says at the end, it says, and the child grew. So we understand that John the Baptist had almost a similar statement made about him in chapter 1. Then we get to Luke chapter 2, and Christ has this said about him on a couple of occasions. You've got basically where you're looking at this, you see that Mary is giving glory to God. You see that even when Simeon does his little note, he says here, "My eyes have seen your salvation." Now, that's not a light statement to take. And so as we build off of what we talked about last week and into the text for today, I want us to understand that where we are, have you ever found yourself in a spiritual slump? Have you ever found yourself really struggling to understand why things are happening the way they are? Maybe you find yourself riddled with guilt over something you've done, or maybe you find yourself anxious about the circumstances around you. Maybe there's something going on that you just don't understand, and for the life of you. Now, if you've been reading the chronological, you understand a little bit maybe where I might be going with this, because Job had this same attitude in some ways. Satan goes before God and says, "Why are you here?" He says, "I've been roaming the earth." And God says, "Have you considered my servant Job?" And Satan says, "What can I do to him? You've protected him." And God opens the door for Satan to do what he wants. Well, at some point, Job, who has, it tells you in the scripture, did not sin in doing or saying the things that he said. All of a sudden, Job is now questioning God, going, "I've done all of this for you. And here you are. It would have been better that I not be born." I mean, we find those days in our lives. We find those circumstances in our lives. He wants to curse God at some point, because, I mean, we all find ourselves in that situation. Now, it does say, you know, I don't believe that Job questioned God the way sometimes we do. I mean, sometimes we question God to the point where we turn our back on him. I can't tell you how many people I've had conversations with just in the last 6 months who have told me, what's the purpose of serving God when he doesn't give me anything I want? And my first statement is, it's because of that attitude you don't receive. They're like, I pray about it and I just don't get it. I'm like, but it's because of you saying that statement, the I want statement. He doesn't do what I want him to do. Have you ever thought that maybe the want we have is not God's will? The want you have, the desire to do something different. I mean, Paul himself even said that he had a thorn in the side and he asked 3 times for it to be removed and it wasn't. So if we think about this, we got to understand there are things that are not necessarily going to please us when it comes to walking in the faith. That doesn't mean that it's not God's will. It means that our mind is not on his will. It means that our mind is not on fulfilling God's will in our lives. It means that our will, we're trying to introduce to the situation. At which point, God is basically teaching us a lesson. So here we have Mary and Joseph, who were just like us. Now, I want us to understand something here. Mary being selected by God to be the mother of Christ, that's an interesting thing to have happen to you. But you see, I find myself spiritually in a slump sometimes where I'm struggling to wonder why things are happening the way they are, why things have built up to this point, and then all of a sudden it just felt like everything around me has crumbled. But when you're in a slump, it's a great time to turn things around. I think about baseball. When you have a hitter who has been hitting 400 or 500 for a year, then all of a sudden they can't get a hit for anything. They find themselves in a slump. Maybe it's another sport where a basketball player isn't able to hit the shots that he normally once was able to hit. And they have to do things differently sometimes to get themselves out. But the reality of it is what I teach kids in baseball, I learned in the Christian life. And that is simply this. When you're in a slump, if your mechanics are right, if they were working, if you were hitting well, don't stop doing what you were doing. Look at it, make sure something didn't change, but continue to do what you knew was right. And I think that applies to the Christian life that I learned from my dad, not necessarily about baseball, but about life. When you are living a Christian life and you were walking along and you were looking at life in a way that things are going well and then all of a sudden everything comes crashing down around you, but you know you haven't sinned, you know you haven't given in, you know that you've been faithful to God's will, then keep doing what you're doing and allow God's will to play out, because it might be that the trial you're facing now is for his greater glory. It might be that somehow, some way in this circumstance, that trial is going to bring someone else to the faith. And you just need to keep doing what you're doing because you're doing it in the faith and the obedience that God has called you to. See, that's a hard thing to do. That is a very hard thing for us to do sometimes. That keep going when things get tough. Keep going when things don't seem like they should. I had this plan for my life and it has fallen apart. Well, that's good. Did the plan correspond with God's will? Yes, then keep doing what you were doing. No, then let's look at the plan and see where we can fix it. Let's look at that baseball swing and see where we can fix it. Let's make sure that your technique is still right. You know, let's look and see that if what you're doing is the same as what you were doing. Make sure that you're still grounded where you need to be. And if you are, then stay true to the course that you were on. He didn't promise it would be easy, but he did say, take my yoke upon you. So let's get back to Mary and Joseph. They're just like us. They got distracted by life. Now, what we need to understand a little bit is there were 3 feasts during the year that they were required to come to Jerusalem. All men were required to go to Jerusalem. They had no choice in the matter. I can take you to Exodus. I can take you to Deuteronomy and show you the writing about that. I mean, if we go back to Deuteronomy chapter 6 or chapter 16, the Passover, it says, observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover to the Lord your God. For in the month of Abib, the Lord your God brought you out of Egypt by night. And then verse 16, it says this. It says, three times a year, all your males shall appear before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses, at the feast of unleavened bread, at the feast of weeks, and at the feast of tabernacles, and they shall not appear before the Lord empty handed. Now, if we go back to Exodus, it lays out the three feasts and it lays out how it's supposed to be. But again, it says all males should attend. So they had gone to Jerusalem for one of these feasts. Christ, being 12 years old, is now required to go. And they go to Jerusalem. And as they pack up to leave, they just lose sight of Christ for a minute. They lose sight of him, leave him alone for a minute, and he stays. He ends up in the temple. Now, let's look at this from a human standpoint of where we are right now and how we relate to Mary and Joseph. When everything seems to be going well, when you are living and Christ is part of your life, yes, we can take a lesson for us today out of Parenthood 101 by Mary and Joseph. Now, that might seem a little bit crazy to think about, but we can take a lesson out of something they didn't necessarily do wrong, but it's something they didn't necessarily do right. You are the parents of the most perfect child that's ever been born and ever will be born. And you can make a mistake. What was the mistake? Well, it wasn't a mistake at all in the eyes of Jesus. But it was a big mistake in the eyes of Mary and Joseph. It's like we've got the most perfect child that's ever been born. He's going to be perfect. And we just left him at the temple. We just left him in Jerusalem and took off. Went a whole day without him. Then when we started looking for him, he wasn't there. I mean, not many mothers are going to want to take advice from a mother who lost her own child for 3 days, right? But let's look at something really closely about what took place. And as I said last week, some of these things are going to correlate with things we see later. This 3 days, we're going to see that again. Because the whole world will lose Christ for 3 days. Remember? They put him on a cross, died. 3 days later, he rose from the grave. I don't think it's any accident that that was the time frame. But what I do think is that what we can learn from Mary and Joseph in this is that they may not always get it right, but they lost sight of Christ. How many times in our lives do we lose sight of Christ? How many times when we're going down the road, we think everything's good, and then we get a day or two in and we realize, where is he in all of this? What have I done? I have forgotten him back here, and I need to go back and find him in this situation. You see, it makes a little more sense now. It makes a little more sense as where I was going at the beginning, because when we lose sight of Christ, we fail to keep up with where God wants us. How do I know this? Well, look at the way that it played out. What's his response? What was the response he gave Mary when she questioned him? He said, "Didn't you know I had to be about my father's business?" It's impressive. Maybe a little bit of a slap in the face to Joseph, given that Joseph, when Mary shows up, "Your father and I have been worried," and he says, "I had to be about my father's business." I mean, it's kind of like the adoptive dad and the stepkid that one day the kid, "You're not my father," kind of speech. It hurts, but Joseph had bought into this full force because he understood that. And that's not something that a step-parent doesn't know. They always know that they are not truly the parent of that child. But it's not something that they want to have heard. It's not the, "Well, I'm going to let you be my dad to an extent, and then one day I'm going to tell you you're not my dad solely based on the fact that you're really not, and there's nothing you can do, and if you want that control over me." That happens all too often in blended families. It happens way too much in families that are broken. But I don't believe that's necessarily what Christ is doing, what Jesus was doing. But we need to look at three stages of this, because they had to go through these three stages of finding him to understand what we need to do today. Let's start by simply looking at something that we can overlook in the story. He was missing, but he wasn't noticed. All right, now, it didn't get noticed for a day. That is something we all go through. That is a stage of life that we all go through. We think we're moving on. We think we're moving forward. We think that our mindset is correct. And then one day we stop and we recognize, I've been missing Christ in this. I have been missing Jesus as an aspect of what I'm trying to do here. I've been moving forward in my own way, in my own will, and we recognize that Christ is missing. Now, that doesn't necessarily always mean that we start a project and then we go back and we have to find him in it. This could also mean someone that started life, and then when they recognized that Christ was the missing piece in their life, they could also come back and find it. It could be that it's a 30-year process that leads them to an altar of forgiveness. But it's also something that happens in every one of our lives today. We get so wrapped up in the hustle and bustle of life. We get so wrapped up in the busyness of the work that we have to do. The holidays seem to be a really good time for us to experience this, because maybe we have four or five places we need to go, and then all of a sudden we find ourselves with no time to just sit and reflect. When you go through the motions, even if you mention his name, it's not necessarily involving him in the service. We could sit there and talk about Christ day in and day out, but are we truly allowing him? Believe me, this has slapped me in the face a couple of times with the way the weeks have played out at the radio station. I talk about Jesus day in and day out, but sometimes I'm wondering, you know, I have to catch myself and think real hard about what I'm saying. Because sometimes there are days where I just rattle off something that I've been told. Rattle off something that I remember from childhood, and then I go, does that really mean that to me? Or am I leaving him out of something that describes him? Now, does that mean that somebody out there is not getting a blessing from what I'm saying? No. But it could very well mean that I'm not doing it with the right heart, with the right frame of mind, with the right attitude about it. It could be that it comes out of a place of struggle, and I'm not recognizing that Christ is even a part of where I am. It could be that I'm speaking completely based on what the Spirit has laid on my heart, and I don't even know what I'm saying. I didn't plan to say it, and in the end of it, I don't remember what I said. I've had those moments. But sometimes we find ourselves in circumstances where we have misplaced Christ, and Christ goes missing from our lives, and there will be a time before that we neglected to see if he was there. That we neglected to look for his presence in the situation. And I don't want to criticize Mary and Joseph too much. I really don't, because we're all just the same. We all misplace Christ every once in a while. But we can't understand this, that we can get too busy with our earthly concerns to be heavenly minded. We get too busy with the things of earth, the earthly concerns. How am I going to get to and from this place? You know, when we joke with Pat about getting a new car, but that's a legitimate worry. If you want to be able to get somewhere, you got to have something that'll get you there. But can we become too consumed with that to find ourselves in a bad spot? Now, I know I'm probably not going to get through this entire thing. It may carry over till next week. But I do want us to understand a couple of things really quickly. And that is simply this. Number one, when we become consumed with our earthly needs, to the point that we forget about the spiritual ones, we do ourselves a disservice. We forget that we have that opportunity to see God in the movement of how things happen. God can bless us on this earth, but he can also take away some of our earthly possessions when he's not involved in them. It's a matter of finding a delicate balance with the spiritual life. Not allowing other things to consume us to the point that it overtakes his place in our lives. Millionaires are concerned more about the millions they're making most of the time than the one who maybe blessed them with it. That's why you see a lot of businessmen take their own lives, because they've poured everything into them, to their dollars. They've poured everything into to making the money that they make, and then they turn around and one day half of it's gone. One day something happens and they lose 75% of their income. They lose all of their income. I'd say a few of the homeless people that I came across in New York when we were up there, there were ones that told stories of making $400,000 or $500,000 a year working in a big business, and they lose their job. And within 2 months, that money's gone. They're spending it on drugs, alcohol, whatever. But they can literally go from a $500,000 a month job or $500,000 a year job to living on the street in a matter of weeks or months. And they find themselves on the street wondering why and how. And the only thing that they do is just continue to consume themselves with the things of the world to try and fill a void that they've never found. They have misplaced Christ somewhere along the way, or they never had him placed in the first place. And so as you look at these type stories and you look at these type things, it'd be easy to criticize Mary and Joseph. We get caught up in the culture. We get caught up in the affluence, the appearance, and the achievement of what our cultural values are, of what the society tells us we need to have. I'm 38 years old and I'm not married, and society, especially here, thinks that you should have been at 25. Should you? I don't know. It's not the life he called me to. And I deal with it on a weekly basis. Some little lady will call the radio station and say, honey, what's wrong with you? Why aren't you married? I mean, and I'm not saying anything about anybody in here. Nobody in here has asked me what was wrong with me. They've just said, why aren't you married? But I've had people call me and say, what's wrong with you? Why aren't you married? Why don't you have this? Why don't you have that? And the only response I can give them is, it's not his time. That's the only answer I've got. To which I've had people tell me, well, maybe you just pushed his time out the window and went with your own time. No, I don't believe so. I mean, there's have to come a day where his time would have worked out eventually, right? I don't know. I really don't know the answer to that. I just know why I'm where I'm at right now. And that's because he led me here. That's because he led me to do what I'm doing in my life. And I'm okay with that, whatever that might mean. But what it looks at here, these are not the values of the kingdom. They're not the values of God's kingdom. God's kingdom is to further the kingdom. Those are the values of Christ. And us living with Christ as a part of our lives. But we get so wrapped up in the things the world tells us we need. The money, the car, the attitude, whatever it might be. We get so wrapped up in those things that we forget Christ. We need to find him. We need to make our way back to Jerusalem, so to speak. When we live in the culture, it's easy for us to get caught up in it. When we live in the world, it's easy for the church to get caught up in it. We talk about that numerous times. The church bringing in different, I mean, your Sunday school lesson right along these lines with it a little bit. When we come into the church, it's real easy for us to want to bring the world in with us. We want to bring the world in and say, well, we've got to do this to reach this one. No, the Spirit is still the same as it was 2,000 years ago. There's no reason we need to try to change the Spirit to change someone's mind. The Spirit can do its work. Sometimes it takes us getting out of the way and we become a roadblock better than we become a help. Or we tell them that this is the Spirit that they should be looking for, when in fact the Spirit's been working on them and we've kind of turned their hearts against the actual Spirit of God working in their heart. Because, well, that's just not what God looks like anymore. No, God looks the same as he always did. If you want to know who he is, look to the scripture. Don't look to your neighbor. Don't look to the friend down the street who says, well, I just don't see how we couldn't serve a God that would be so hateful. God's not hateful. God has wrath. But he's a loving God who I'm sorry, but if I'm going to turn against you one day because of something you do, I'm going to tell you why I'm going to turn against you. That's God. Not the neighbor who just on a whim changes their mind about who you are and then becomes hateful to you because, well, all of a sudden you're a different person. God's never been different. He told you what he would dislike. He told you what he hated. And yet we still live in the hatred of God because we choose that lifestyle. We decide that that's the life for us because God's not good enough. And then we look back on it going, well, why is God so hateful? God's not going to send me to hell because, you know, I know who he is. Yeah, so do the demons. Guess where they get to go? Guess where their life is destined? You see, there's a plan that God has told us about. He's laid it all out for us in his word. So as we look at this and we see, that's where Jesus has to remind Mary and Joseph. They had gotten wrapped up in the things of getting out of town, getting back home, getting all this. And then all of a sudden it's like, wait, do you have Jesus? No, I thought you did.
Well, let's check with family. And they go back through the line. They can't find him. And they find out they have to go back to Jerusalem.
You see, now here's the thing. If we happen to lose him, then what we can learn from this is that it's important for us to finally come to realize that Christ is missing and to go back. Not to continue in the path that we're on, but to go back. To find our way back to where we lost him, to where we got misguided, to where we left him out of the equation, and find our way back to that point and start over there. It doesn't mean that we're doing things necessarily the wrong way, but somehow, some way, we've gotten off track and we need to get back to God's will for the path that he wants us on. It could mean that we've put ourselves in a bad spot. It could mean that we chose something wrong for our lives. And the reality of life is simply this. There are days that we get so wrapped up in the thing around us that the worldly point of view, the way that others make us feel, or the way that we think they should look, or that they think we should look. We get so wrapped up in all of that that we forget to put on Christ. We forget to put on the armor of God. We might find that our earthly existence has become centered on something less than Christ. Maybe it's the money. Maybe it's the worldly desire that will die with us when we leave the world that has taken a hold so obsessively within us. The sins, the joys of now rather than the joys of the kingdom. You see, we might find that some anxious fear is driving us. That this joy and peace is in this believing of which of the scriptures speak is gone. And instead of love leading us, fear is directing the steps that we take. It could be that there are so many things that we harbor doubt over. You know, as we look and as we look to wrap this up this morning, and then I'll continue next week with this thought process. And I knew it was going to be a long one. But I want us to understand something. We're going to spend 2 weeks talking about the boy Jesus, but the lesson that we can learn from the boy Jesus. This week, it's the lesson from Mary and Joseph, and that is we can forget Christ. We can forget where we left him. We can move on with our lives and leave him somewhere else and then recognize that he's not with us in that moment. That we've somehow, some way, pushed him aside or forgotten to look for him in the circumstance or the situation. You see, doubt can take many forms. It can be a doubt about God. It can be a doubt about ourselves. It can be a dark place that we might be in or find ourselves in. It's a place to travel through towards something better. It's not a place for us to live. It's not a place for us to make a residence. If doubt is something that is continuing to drive us, continuing to separate us from where God is, then we need to take a step back and find ourselves from that doubting point of view. I mean, look at the life of Job. At some point, his friends got to him. And he finally says, God, I've done this, 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 and this. I've done all of these things for you. And the first thing that God does is he goes, who are you to question me? I can do with you as I wish. But it's a loving God that will approach us in that manner. It's a loving God that has always approached us in that manner. It is a loving God that went and said, I'm going to destroy the world. And then he found favor with one. It doesn't say he found favor in Noah's family. He found favor in Noah. And then he flooded the world. But he didn't just save Noah. He saved his family. Knowing that the patriarch would lead the others. You see, that's the situation that we face today in this world. Is God looking on our lives and finding favor with us as a servant of him? The way he finds favor in us is that we do like Christ did. And we'll talk about this a little more next week. We'll develop the point. But I simply want to say this. What is the first step to us finding Christ again in our lives right now? What is the first step to us understanding Mary and Joseph's predicament and circumstance? Well, it's simply this. The first step is to be completely honest with yourself. Be completely honest with yourself. When you get into a situation, sit down and figure out why you're in it.
Have you been following what God has led you to do? Or have you taken a step out of the norm, out of the ordinary? Have you kind of wavered from where you were, the thing that was leading you forward and where you felt His presence? Are you feeling His presence in your life today? And if not, find out why. Be honest with yourself. What is blocking that presence from being an experience that you can have today? What is blocking you from feeling the Spirit at work in your life? He didn't go anywhere. He hasn't left you. His promise is that He'll never leave nor forsake you. There's a promise in that, that we will always have Him with us, as long as we don't wander off. As long as we don't leave Him where He is and where He wants us to be, to go and find our own path for a few minutes or a few days or for the rest of our lives. See, we have to admit to ourselves that He's missing. And we have to stop and we have to take stock in where we're at and say, okay, who am I? What have I done? And how do I get back? And the best time for us to do that is today. The best time for us to do that is today. And we can learn a lesson from Christ, and where we're going to continue on from this, we are going to learn a lesson in this through Christ. But what if we find Him missing? What's next? How do we get ourselves to that point? It's pretty simple, but critical. We've got to understand where we get concerned. We break into a kind of dissatisfaction, and we develop the Scriptures sort of a godly sorrow, where the woe is me, and we begin to think that we're doing it on our own. The lesson we learn from Christ in this, and like I said, we'll develop it next week, is this. What was His response to Mary? His response was, "Didn't you know had to be about My Father's business?" He wasn't talking about carpentry, and He wasn't talking about Joseph, folks. He was talking about God, and He was talking about being where God wants you to be. He was talking about being in the temple, teaching and learning. How do we get back? Well, number one, we look to where He is. If you've wandered away, if you know someone who's wandered away, the best thing you can encourage them to do is come into the church. Now, not all churches are built the same, I understand. Not all churches are fully focused spiritually. But I can promise you, between myself, Blake, Lamar, Charlie, Joe, the leadership at this church, we want to be spiritually driven here. We want to be following the will of God. Bring them here. Pray over them. Take it back to the temple, like Mary and Joseph did, and find Him where He always will be. And that is about His Father's business. And when we seek God and seek to have Him lead that part of our lives, we will find peace and comfort in that. So as we close today, know that next week we are going to start talking a little more about being about the Father's business. But if you have a decision to make, if you feel you've misplaced Him today, then this is a good place to start. If you feel that you need to get some things right. Now, I know that not everybody in here needs an invitation every week. And I know that some weeks we don't do it. But I'm going to tell you right now, if you've got a place to be, if you needed something to say, say it and we can pray for you. That's no problem. But I hope that today we can all make that decision in our lives to step out of where we are and really look at the situation from outside for a moment. And say, okay, am I doing what He wants me to do? Or have I tried to stray a little bit on this path that is life? And I need to get back to the temple where Christ is about His Father's business and can lead me forward the way that He needs to lead me today.